Hey there. Good morning. It's Friday, August 6th. Oh, happy day. Yeah, no, it's a pretty good day. How you doing? Hopefully everybody's doing all right out there. I'm doing pretty good, I guess. It's end of the week. TGIF. We do Pizza Friday out here. I've mentioned that before, so I'm not entirely sure where we're going to order pizza from, but yeehaw. Kind of a shaky day for me as I've mentioned, my daughter, my youngest, is going to Florida for a week and she's going to leave tomorrow. First time she's ever been on a plane. Florida seems to be running rampant with COVID because they're all running around and have been for a while, just kind of haphazardly not paying attention to anything. And, you know, she's only 15, so she and our 18-year-old have not been vaccinated because I've mentioned before they're both girls. There's been signs of problems for female reproductive systems with some of the vaccine or all of the vaccines. Or it's been noted anyway. So, and again, they're, you know, young and stuff, but it's a little bit on top of mind for me because I'm a little concerned about, you know, I mean, she's going to be gone a week. She's going to be 1,800 miles away. She's, you know, obviously we know the people they're going, that she's going with, but nevertheless, it's a little, you know, disconcerting and concerning and scary and all that fun stuff. Not fun, but you know, you get the sarcasm there. Anyway, so it's a little bit concerning that she's going to be leaving. I don't like that, but got to let them go at some point and do their thing, right? I'm such a homebody, you know, I really like to. It's funny because you'd think I'd have this amazing house because I like to be at home all the time, but I mean, I really don't. That's been my argument in my head for a long time. It's like, maybe I should really go out and get like a really nice home, but because I spend so much time in it, I might as well have like a really awesome place. But at this point, it seems kind of futile. You know, everybody's almost grown now. I mean, what's the point of going and spending $300,000-$400,000 on a house when who's going to be in it? You know, I mean, I would argue that, I mean, literally who's going to be in it once my kids grow and they move out on their own completely, I'm not entirely sure what's going to happen here anyway. So, well, it seems fairly foolish to go make that kind of investment at this stage in my life or our lives or whatever you want to call it. So I'm not doing that. But on that note of kind of being a homebody, I wanted to talk a little bit today about something that's been on my mind quite a bit. And that's, you know, remote work or work from home or going back into the office. And I mean, I understand this is a monologue, so nobody's going to answer me, but you know, I'm just curious. I'm curious as to other people's thoughts. I've read quite a few articles on this subject. I've looked at it, I wouldn't say extensively, but you know, I've taken a look at it from a semantic standpoint and, you know, it's hard to be objective because I've been a remote worker for on and off, you know, on and off, honestly, for like 15 years. You know, when I worked for Yahoo, I would consider that a hybrid remote. So my teams were not in an office, but I had a space in an office that I could go to, or I could work from home. Nobody really cared. But most of the time I went into the office because it was a nice facility. There were other people there. Well, a couple anyway. And it was in my town of Lockport, so it was really close. So it wasn't like some major trek to some faraway land for me to drive in. So I would most of the time just go into the office. But technically, I was remote from my team. Everyone that I was working with each day was only available to me via chat most of the time. And telephones were not something that people really used there. Only for the international meetings did we really get on a call. So, you know, the majority of my 5 years there was a hybrid remote. And, you know, the position I had after that was 100% remote. I mean, I went out and visited, not necessarily every quarter, but, I tried to get out there a few times a year anyway. That was fun. Whenever they would, you know, welcome me out, I would come out. It was always a good time. Hate the travel. I mean, I'm just so not into that kind of stuff. But I actually just got an email yesterday about going to an AWS event in Vegas. I'm like, ugh. If I only liked to travel. I mean, it's actually not a bad trip because the Buffalo Niagara International Airport out here will fly direct to Vegas. So it's a nonstop. There's no transfers or anything like that. So that's not too bad, but it's still like a four hour and change flight, which I'm such a baby, but that's just such a ugh. I mean, I can see, you know, I've seen some of these videos where people are flying first class, like these $20,000 plane tickets. It's like, wow, that would be the way to go. But yeah, this would be a coach. But it might be cool to go to something that has a boot camp thing, and I could potentially attend the boot camp and then take the certification test right then and there and just poof, be done with it. That's kind of appealing, actually. So I would suck it up and do it for that reason, because the downside of the whole thing, though, is that I would have to go with my boss, and you know, that would just be like, there's a lot of resentment. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. I mean, you know, it is what it is. And I'm still struggling with that, because I'm not unhappy at all with what I'm doing. I'm just, you know, I'm still kind of butthurt about the way the whole thing was done. And you know, clearly they don't have a high opinion of me if they don't want me on their leadership team. So that's a problem for me, you know, and it's really driving this whole, you know, looking at different opportunities and seeing what else is out there and trying to come to terms with that whole thing. I had an interview yesterday. I'm not sure if I mentioned that, but I think it went well, although there's an awful lot of concern about the fact that I've been remote, and I don't know why that's a focus in technology. Why would you care? But they made it very clear that this is not a remote position. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about a little bit more today, is that, you know, there's a lot of benefits to being remote. You know, and there, I would understand and argue as well that there are a lot of benefits to being in an office. I mean, if your team is there, if the people that you're going to work directly with are in the office, I can absolutely get on board with why you would want people in the office. But here's my problem. And, you know, this is where the real dilemma comes in for me, is that where I work today is a very similar type of organization to what I'm considering with this other organization. So it would be very much the same. And of course, they're two different companies, different groups of people, all that stuff is different. So it's not the same in that regard, but it's the same segment of business in technology. And when I worked in the office with the company I work for now, all of my team was in the office. And I got to be honest, there was almost no interaction anyway. So this illusion of like, oh, everybody's going to interact and it's so important that you're here in the office was absolutely bullshit. It wasn't true at all. People still wanted to just kind of be left alone and do their own thing and not be bothered by interacting with people constantly. So there was a good argument for like, well, then what are we doing in the office anyway? You know, you keep claiming there's this big draw to being in the office, and there's this big cultural, you know, I don't know, cultural goal that we'll attain by doing that. But it's really, the culture has to exist. And I've said this before, but if you don't have it, it's not just going to happen simply because you're together. It's something you have to physically and emotionally and mentally instigate. You have to actually do these things. And, you know, I would argue that where I'm at now, there, you know, people are just dropping like flies. They're leaving and quitting and moving on to different careers at other companies. You know, we don't have that kind of culture here. So just putting people in an office is not going to fix that problem. And I really, you know, I have no influence over that anymore. I'm not on the leadership team now, so that's not something that I'm engaged to discuss. But I really, you know, and sincerely wish they understood that, you know, they're making a big mistake in thinking that just having an office is going to solve these problems, when the majority of the people aren't coming back into the office anyway. Most people, and I find this to be true, are willing to give up their position just so that they don't have to come back to the office. They'd rather go work somewhere else than come back in and work, because there's really no value in it if you don't find yourself in a place that has the right culture, like I said. And the right culture is not a fancy office with new equipment in it and modernized, you know, like cubbies in the wall and isolation booths and stuff. None of that crap matters if people that are there are not working collaboratively. You know, if you have these lines that exist, they still exist whether you're in person or you're remote. Doesn't make any difference. You know, the barriers are still there. The walls are still there. It's awkward. It's uncomfortable. And it's strange. Like, I can remember talking to people in the office, you know, back before COVID, and it was weird. They were like, "Why are you talking to me? This is strange. What are you? What? Hello? What's?" It was very awkward because they don't have the culture that's required for that kind of interaction. It's still very much like, I'm the boss, you're the subordinate, do what I say, don't bother me at all unless you have a really good reason. And that's kind of the culture that is here. There is not this open door policy. It's bullshit. I mean, this is just like a $15 or $20 million company and the CEO has an assistant that he won't share with anyone that just sets up appointments and meetings for him, and he has no idea what he's doing at all. Yeah, he's not involved. I can understand if this guy was like in the thick of it, you know, and like was doing work and was part of the engineering and was in the sales and doing all, I don't even know what he does. And I'm not questioning that to be a wise guy or be negative. It's just, what are you even doing? You clearly have no idea what's going on from the technology standpoint. And I'm, as I've said before, I'm finding out now that I'm deep into the learning the technology for some of these clients. It's like, it's an absolute atrocity. There's such a mess here. It's unbelievable. And it's going to have to take full-on transparency and honesty to get this where it needs to be, because I'm going to literally have to ask clients, hey, I have no idea how any of this works. Can you walk me through it? So I can give you the right technology answer or technological answer or solution. So, and this again, this is all remote. This isn't me being on site with somebody, but we have this weird, there's this weird thing in MSPs where it in their mind, it matters that you're physically present. And that's, you know, really causing me a little bit of concern with regard to this position that I've been considering, is that they're super hyper focused on that component alone. So it's not that I have any problem being in an office. I mean, that certainly isn't it. And that's what I've responded with when we've talked about this. I have no issues being in a physical office. I mean, whether there's good reason or not, I can drive into an office. I have a car. It's not a big deal. I would prefer to be home, of course, but I can be in an office. I would actually prefer, to be honest, the most, if I'm honest with myself, a combination, a hybrid. I'd like to come into the office when I feel like it and be at home for other times. So I could come into the office 5 days a week, but it would also make a lot of sense for me not to have to be there for 8 solid hours. You know, and I kind of have that now. I mean, I can come into the office. We're going to do this hoteling kind of thing if I want to drive in and sit in the office for the day. I mean, I'm not too keen on being on the 30th floor of this huge building, but I could actually realize that and go sit in the office, I guess, whenever I wanted. So I kind of have that, but it makes me really concerned that they're so hyper-focused on the fact that, you know, it's got to be in person. That makes me question the culture. It's like, do you not get how effective remote work can be? So I'm trying to, you know, not just find an opportunity, find the right opportunity. You know, and I say that to everyone when I have these conversations. It's like, this isn't just about the money or moving to a new job. I'm trying to find where I fit in, you know? And so remote work being a big component of my life, you know, it's still something that I think is on the table in terms of, you know, if you really want to maximize what people are able to do for you, there's going to be some give and take with regards to giving them the freedom and the flexibility to kind of do what they want. And that's, you know, very telling in terms of the empowerment. So if somebody is not empowered to make those kinds of minimal and simplistic decisions, then what are you really in charge of? You know, it's the same thing that I dealt with here. It's like, well, you know, they gave me the opportunity and they said they were going to give me all the empowerment to do these things, but they really never did. It never worked out that way. It was always somebody else kind of thumbing me on my neck going, yeah, well, we're not going to do that. Well, that's just not how we do it here. And it's like, well, I mean, the whole point that you brought me in here was because I don't do it the way you do it. And you wanted to see how more successful, you know, exponentially larger companies do these things. And now you don't want to hear it. Now you don't want that information. So I don't really know, you know, in that one component, I would argue that, yeah, I'm completely ineffective in this organization in that way, because the things that I am familiar with and know how to do relate and equate back to companies that know what the hell they're doing and have real processes in place and have the real culture that I've been talking about it exists. I mean, this isn't stuff. What I've tried to convey to people over and over again, I don't think they get it, is they feel, I think they felt like I was trying to impose my own will. And what they were missing is that none of this crap was anything that I came up with. This was my experience being in different ecosystems and environments where these things existed for real. And this is how it actually worked. And this is what you actually did. And this is how that was truly built and created. So it's not that this was Garrett Conklin saying, well, this is what I think, almighty me, you know, and poof, go do it. This was much, much smarter, more experienced people than myself in positions of leadership that knew what they were doing, imposing these processes and cultures, and this is how it worked. So these aren't my ideas. They're not unique. They're not original. This is me taking experience and translating it into, hey, this is what was going on over here. Why don't we try that here? Because we don't have this going on here. And we're trying, you're saying you want to fix this problem. This is what how I've seen that problem fixed. That's a good way to articulate that. It's not that this will work here. It's just simply that this is the opportunity that I saw in a previous employer. And this is what they did, and it worked, or it didn't work, right? I mean, whatever the outcome may have been, depending on the conversation and the context, sometimes it didn't work too. There were plenty of opportunities where these things failed and people weren't successful, and they just tried something different. Okay, that didn't work. Let's iterate again. Okay, that didn't work. Like, you know, the fail fast methodology was not just some term or some slogan. It was actually a way in which business was conducted and people were managed. You were encouraged to fail because that's the only way you can really learn something that you don't know how to do, that no one around you knows how to do. You have to just try things and experiment and fail fast. And when you make a mistake, okay, that didn't work. Next, don't do that again. What did I learn from that? It's very scientific in its approach. But, you know, it makes me very concerned that these places are like, well, you got to be here. Well, you know, I definitely want you in the office. It's like, well, to do what? I'm totally fine with it, but no one can answer the question, why? I'm totally fine with it, but, and I don't want to come off confrontational when I, during an interview, and I ask, well, why do you want me in the office? And they can't answer it. So it's more of just, they're not comfortable with the modern position of things. And that's, to me, a red flag. That's at least one red flag of like, this might not be a good fit for me, because I had to really, really, really push hard for the company that I work for today to understand and embrace a fully remote model and, you know, be okay with a hybrid approach to this. They did not at all want to do that. They wanted everyone in the office, butts in seats. And, you know, it just so happened that it made no sense to do that. So eventually everyone came around. But what we ended up proving was that everyone was able to do their job just fine not being in the office. And in fact, a lot of people excelled, a lot of people liked it more, and a lot of people became high performers because they weren't bothered in the office with the banter and the BS that happens. I mean, I've said it before, I could walk down an aisle and just look at people staring out the window. They weren't doing any work. And it's, you know, no disrespect to them and no criticism. I'm just saying as a fact, you can be plenty unproductive sitting in a cube just as much as you can be with distractions at home. Right? I mean, it's just a fact. It's the kind of person and the kind of culture that you build that determines what kind of output you get from people, not that they're sitting in an office. That isn't the sole factor in determining if they're going to be a high performer or a mediocre performer or an underperformer. It has to do with how you manage and deal with people and the kind of culture that you build within your organization that really dictates what people are willing to do for you out of the own goodness of their heart. And that's what it comes down to, is that you have to get people on your team and in your house, so to speak, in that I don't have to go beg somebody to stay extra. They want to because they know it's the right thing because we've treated them right and they feel good about doing the extra and going the extra mile for a client or for a project or for whatever they're working on. That's where I come from. There was never a like, oh, look, it's 5 o'clock, I'm done. It's like you just continued to get things done until they literally were done. And sometimes that meant 3-4 days in a row, you just didn't stop working on stuff. You know, there was no finish. You'd get up, take a break, go take a nap, go get some sleep. I mean, and none of these environments are that aggressive where that's going on. Like you're having a 3-day outage and that's just what you have to do. But nevertheless, those kinds of approaches, that mentality is so powerful for people. You know, I understand it's the workplace, but it really comes down to, do you actually care about what you're doing? Do you actually care about the people you're working with, working for, the clients you're supporting, the technology you're using? You have to have a vested interest in things or you're just not going to care enough. You're going to come in, do the basics, you know, do the bare minimum and then go home. And if that's the kind of culture you want, I mean, that's fine, but you can't really in the same breath say, well, we want these people to be committed and we want all this and we want to do this and that and the other thing, but you don't want to spend the time doing what's needed to build the culture that will actually facilitate that kind of success. Right? Because they go hand in hand. If you want people and things to happen in your organization, you have to build a culture that inspires people to do more than just show up to work and do the bare minimum. You have to actually have incentive plans that make sense. And it has nothing to do with money. It's incentive to have a great environment and not be rewarded with a $25 gift card over and over and over. It's like, you know, that's a nice gesture, but it doesn't build the culture that we're talking about. What builds the culture is quality leadership. And, you know, again, that's what's severely lacking in the organization I'm currently employed by and probably would be lacking in this new place. So I'm really wondering if they actually, this new place that I've been talking to, would embrace what I would bring to the table or just shit their pants like the place that I'm working at now, not like it at all. And I'd find myself in a very similar position that I am in, you know, that where I find myself today, where it's just, it didn't work out because they said they wanted this, but they had no idea what it is and what it really meant. So they really didn't want it remote or in person or, you know, otherwise. And none of that matters because the culture that you're trying to build is not predicated on physical presence. Now, I would argue that you can create different dynamics with people if you're sitting with them and working together, but these places aren't teams. You know, it's still individuals doing their own thing. So me sitting next to one of the guys that I was managing made no difference because I wasn't working on the same thing that he was, right? He was doing his thing. I was doing my thing. The guy behind me was doing something else and the guy across from me was doing something else. So we had four people all doing four different things. Yeah, we were proximity-wise physically in the same place, but we weren't collaborating and working together because we weren't working on the same thing. So what would there be to collaborate on? That's like, you know, you got a general contractor and you got a drywaller, an electrician, a plumber, and a painter. Yeah, they're all there. They're all part of the team, but they're all doing something different. There's no collaboration that needs to take place there. The plumber's going to run his pipe. The electrician's going to run his wire. The drywaller's going to put up all the walls, and then the painter's going to come in and paint it all up and be done. But no, none of that requires interaction of those four people other than coordination of timing. Obviously, there's an order of operations that needs to take place for that, right? The plumber and the electrician can probably work simultaneously and not get in each other's way for the most part, right? That would work. But you can't paint until the drywall's up. You can't put the drywall up till the electrical and the plumbing is in the framing. So there's an order of operations. But other than that, and that would be the only argument for coordination and cooperation and collaboration would be who's going to do what when. And just get out of my way so you're not impeding my progress, basically. But it's no different. If I'm working on something and three other people were all working on all three disparate things, there's really no opportunity for collaboration other than we're physically there in the same place. And we can chit-chat and, you know, shoot Nerf guns over the wall and all that kind of stuff. But the type of collaboration that I'm talking about is where 50 people were all working on the same project, right? This isn't one to one. This is 50 to one. I had 40 developers or 45 developers and 3 to 4 engineers on a team, and everybody was working toward the same thing. Now, you could still argue that everybody was working on their own thing, but we were all collectively working on something for the greater good of one deliverable. So it really did matter. The collaboration did matter. When a piece of code was written, we got information saying, hey, this is done. Is the infrastructure ready to do this? Oh, no. Let's get that ready to go. Now that you're ready, I can build this part of it out for you. And we'll go, you know, so there was real meaningful interaction there. And that's how that culture happened. So I'm almost questioning at this point if that kind of a culture can exist in an MSP. Is it even possible? Because you don't work on things in a project manner. So what is it that you're going to collaborate on? Especially when technologies are completely disparate. Like I work in AWS, the other guy works in Azure and Windows. What are we going to collaborate on? Right? I mean, they're not only literally two different stacks and two different physical products, but two different technologies. It's all the cloud, right? There's that big umbrella of all of this is the cloud. But when you look at the technology, they're very different disciplines and they're very different skill sets. One is predominantly Linux. The other is predominantly Windows. The clouds themselves, you know, the interaction and the tools and the providers and all that stuff, it totally works differently. There's no licensing model in AWS, really. You pay for what you use. In Windows, you have to, you know, there's licensing for the software. There's licensing for third-party products that you would put up in that cloud. There's SaaS offerings where it's all just software as a service platforms where there is no infrastructure to manage. There's platform as a service. There's infrastructure as a service. I mean, there's a lot more, arguably, on the Windows side. But when you get into the AWS side, you get more technical and more depth and more obscure technologies like, you know, Firehose and Kinesis and Redshift and all, you know, data lakes and glue and all this crazy stuff. And I'm not even getting into AI really. It's just, you know, there's a lot of technology that's over there that's, you know, beyond just containers and instances for virtual machines. But, you know, there's really very little for the two architects in this organization to collaborate on because we work in different ecosystems completely. He does his thing, I do my thing, and never the two shall meet because the only thing that has overlap is one of our clients uses Active Directory groups and as part of the SSO for the AWS accounts, and that's about it. Outside of that, I think that's the only crossover I've seen from one cloud to the other is the credentials. And it's cool, you know, single sign-on is nice. It works pretty well. I like it, but I have no idea how it works. I'm not a Windows guy at all. So that kind of a thing, if we need to troubleshoot it, I'll need to look to them to and look to him to help me out with that part of it if it comes down to it. But yeah, I guess I'm kind of torn. You know, I mean, I want to be a remote worker. I like being at home. I enjoy that. But at the same time, I'd like to go into an office. So I'm trying to find kind of a balance between that. And, you know, I mean, quite honestly, I have no idea if this other place is even going to make an offer. I mean, you know, my track record of this is I often get to this point in an interview cycle, you know, where we're at the final stages and then things just take a shit. So I don't know. I'm not even thinking about it too actively right now. If they reach back out to me and want to talk to me about, you know, next steps, then that's great. But otherwise, I've done everything that I can do. I've been as transparent as I can be. And that's, you know, I'm learning more about myself and, you know, being bipolar and the type of, you know, kind of right brain person that I am. It's kind of funny that I'm even in technology because theoretically a right brain person wouldn't, you know, I'm much more on the creative side of things than I am on the analytical and the technical side. So that's probably why I struggle so much with writing code and doing some of the deeper levels of engineering. It's just not really in my wheelhouse. I almost wonder if I'd be better in a sales position than I would, you know, like a technical sales role. That might make a lot more sense than me actually doing the technology. I think I thought it was cool to do the technology, but I got to be quite honest with myself and be true to the fact that I probably don't have the intellectual aptitude to really do these things at a very high functioning level. I just don't have that kind of brain. I did a thing the other day, and I know this stuff is bullshit, but I did a thing, like an assessment of like, look at this picture and it'll tell you what kind of brain, you know, what brain side you operate from based on what you see first and how you respond to things and stuff. So it went through like five or six different scenarios. And then it came back with, you know, I'm a right brain. I'm a creative. And I mean, you know, that's totally spot on. I mean, it doesn't mean I'm not saying that to say that, oh yeah, because I write song. It doesn't mean they're any good. It just means I enjoy drawing, being creative, coloring, you know, music, obviously, anything creative. I enjoy the creative thing. I enjoy collaboration. I enjoy that kind of stuff. I am super emotional. I don't know that I would argue that I have emotional intelligence. I'm probably more emotionally ignorant than anything else, but you know, I'm a very sensitive person. I'm not like Spock. Let's put it into terms, right? I'm not a Vulcan. I would liken the Vulcans much more to, you know, an engineer, which is what he was, to then more. I'm way more like Kirk. Not that I'm a leader in the sense that I'm real passionate and I'm super into what I'm doing and I'm very emotional about things and I take things very much to heart and very personally. That's who I am as a person. So maybe I'm looking for the wrong jobs. And I wonder if I can change careers that drastically at this point in my life. Hey, if you're out there and you're looking for a whack job like me, hey, hit me up because I'm looking for a position that might be rewarding to me. Now, I'm not saying I should be a salesperson. I don't know what this is that I'm describing, to be honest. You know, I have a lot of technical aptitude. I have a lot of technical experience, but I'm a very emotionally aware and emotionally intelligent or ignorant person at times. I'm very passionate about what I do. I'm super transparent. You know, I'm all about just solving the problem. You know, I think that I'm binary, but I'm probably not. I think I just say that because it sounds cool, but I may not be as binary as I think, but I'm definitely starting to learn more about myself and really think that I'm not really an engineer. And that's, again, why I wanted to take this role, because I wanted to get away from some of the depth of technology, because it's just, it doesn't really interest me that much anymore. I don't really want to do this kind of stuff. I mean, I think it's cool, but I don't think that it's my forte where I'm the one that's figuring it all out and doing it all. I think there are people that are just more skilled and have a bit more intellect in that area than I do. Because every time I try to learn something new, I find it like boring and tedious and frustrating. I'm not really like, it doesn't make me feel excited, you know, and like, ooh, this is cool. I can't wait to do, like, I don't really. I mean, I do it because I have to do it. That's why I'm doing it. So I don't know. I'll take any help I can get. So if you guys have any idea what, maybe I need to look for like a recruiter or a headhunter or something like that, that can kind of help me put into words what it is I'm describing here. And then I can rewrite my resume or have my resume redone to reflect what I really bring to the table. And I feel like I'm more like an evangelist or some kind of, that's why I felt like leadership was the right thing for me. I don't know if it's leadership in terms of managing people as much as it is leadership in the sense that the whole aura of what I'm bringing to the table is really like, it's a mantra. It's a feeling. It's an experience. It's a culture, you know, and I'd kind of need to be empowered to be able to create that wherever I am and not be forced into the technology of as a doer, you know. And I guess that's my dilemma here as well, is that I was taken away from that position where that's what I wanted to do, and I was put back into a mindset of, well, you know, we need you to be a doer because we think you'd be better as a doer. And I'm like, man, I don't agree. I mean, you can think whatever you want, but I don't think that at all. I can do some of this stuff, but I don't really want to do that. I want to do this kind of stuff. I want to inspire people and talk to people and work with people in this way and make it compelling to want to come to the office for real, because it's such an exciting environment and experience that, you know, when you're there, there's all this cool shit going on. You know, there's a real reason to be there, not just because I was told I had to show up today and be in the office all day. You know, and I can argue that I can be this way even in a doer role. Like, I can be an advocate for people and reach out and say thanks and be a cheerleader and a champion and you know, and an evangelist for all this stuff, just doing it. But I feel definitely like the technology, unless I already know, you know, most of what I'm trying to do, like I love Linux. I wish Linux was still a thing, right? I wish the cloud wasn't really kind of taking over to the extent that to which it is now, where the operating system is becoming less and less important, because I really did love working on Linux systems and I was pretty good at it. I mean, I was no expert, but I definitely know that operating system. I'm very good with the bash shell, the Z shell. I'm very good with shell scripting in general. I'm really good with the CLI. I'm good at that kind of stuff. And I enjoy doing it. Like everything I do in AWS, you know, 99% of it I do on the command line, because using that CLI is very shelly. It's very bash oriented, very, very familiar to me. And I like doing that. It's fun. It's cool. It's effective. You know, I like writing long command strings. I don't know. It's a weird thing to like, but it's what I like to do. But that's, you know, definitely a dinosaur thing now. People are not, you know, that's been replaced by DevOps, where you need to be able to write real code, not just commands. So trying to find a job where I'm a Linux admin would be probably pretty difficult. I haven't seen anything like that come up, but I would definitely enjoy doing that because that's my thing. You know, but again, it's most people in the cloud are not just running a barrage of EC2 instances that are running Linux. They're doing, you know, container services, or they're doing some kind of Lambda functions and serverless designs where, you know, you really do need to know the code that's being written and understand pipelines a lot more. And it's more about different technologies. It's not nearly as much about the operating system. So, you know, I don't know that I'll be able to find or land in a position like that either. I know this place that I'm interviewing with is, again, they're a Windows shop, and they're even less technical than where I'm at now, in the sense that I think they farm everything out. They haven't really gotten into super detail about how that works, but it sounds to me like everything is tool-based. So we have a bunch of people, they have a bunch of people there working on, you know, just a tool that does backups, a tool that does firewalls, a tool that does networking, a tool that does security, not people that actually understand the technology outside of the tool that does the work, which is interesting. I mean, that, you know, that's not a bad thing. I think that's fairly limiting in terms of what you're going to be able to accomplish and achieve. So in a way, to me, that makes them not really a competitor to the place I'm at now, because what we're trying to do is very different. Even though we're failing miserably at it, we definitely do real engineering work. It's not just tool-based. It's building infrastructure and things like that. And to some degree using like the Power Platform in Windows to write and build like Power BI or Power Analytics or, you know, Power Apps, things like that for clients, you know. So that's definitely more on the engineering side. But yeah, I don't know. I started this off with being all about remote and, you know, that kind of thing. And I like that freedom and the flexibility. And I mean, there's no place like home for me. Like I really enjoy being around my family as much as I can be, even though I have a lot of issues all the time with my family, you know, namely my wife, where we just, you know, like yesterday we had a big blowout again. And it's just, you know, it's such a difficult balance for me, because when those types of things happen, you know, I just don't want to be here. I want to be, it's like, nah, I wish I was at an office. I just wouldn't have to deal with this. But at the same time, if I was at an office, I wouldn't be able to just pick up my flugelhorn whenever I felt like it and blow out a few notes and just get that good feeling. So there's, I don't know, I'm weighing the pros and cons of the whole thing. I don't have a ton of options on the table, you know, and quite frankly, the best option I have is where I'm most emotionally torn, in that if I just continue to perform where I'm at, this place will probably just leave me alone to do my own thing. And, you know, that'd be fine. Aside from the continuing technical requirements, which again are pretty minimal. I mean, you know, I should be able to get the AWS Solutions Architect Associate certification with a bootcamp without really too much difficulty. I do know what I'm doing in that cloud. It's just, like I said, I'd rather be more on the leadership side or the pre-sales engineering side. And maybe that's something I look at, as being a pre-sales engineer. Maybe that's more in my wheelhouse, where I'm there to support sales and I'm there to talk about the technology in a way that is understandable to the end user, to the client, rather than the guy that's on the back end doing all of the deep deep dive technology. Maybe I'm better in that capacity because I'm certainly not for lack of words. You know, I can run on here for, what are we at? Oh, almost 40 minutes. You know, I'm just blabbing away. So I'm pretty good at that, I think, as a skill set as well. You know, I definitely possess that, the gift of gab, whether people want to hear it or not, you know, I don't know, but I definitely have that. So maybe I should look into some kind of pre-sales engineering. Okay. With that, I think I've kind of, you know, beaten to death the remote versus not remote scenario. So let's move on to Poetic Rhetoric, Nonsensical Blasphemy by Garrett M. Conklin, published in 2016. You think I'm promoting this book more and more every time? I'm just like, holy cow. Anyway, this is a bit longer poem. This one spans 1.5 pages, and it's called Bound. Bound. It's been 10 minutes, so undoubtedly something has gone wrong. Did I say something or do something? Looking at me like I'm King Kong. There goes another 10 minutes. Do I still have a job? Or did some extraneous notion screw me again? Or did some incompetent person sacrifice more men? I used to wish I were here, and now I see that what I want isn't here either. And I am getting the feeling it's nowhere, and I will never find it here, there, or anywhere. So what is one to do? Give up, quit, or try another shoe? I just don't know anymore. I just don't care anymore. But the thing of it is, I really do want to ace this quiz and feel the feeling of truth, the confidence in contentment. But it's been another 10 minutes, so here we go again. I'm often left here with them and sadly feel the same once again. Is anyone real anymore? Does anyone keep the real score? Do we all lie and cheat and sell out? What happened? What's this all about? And 9 more, and things will be different. So just wait it out and scream and shout. Neither makes any difference. You end up starting it again with no significance. So I just wait and count it down from 10 to 1, from 1 to none, though none is not done. Save for lost and found, I hear not a sound, waiting to be crowned. It rests upon my head, my life perpetually bound. That was kind of poignant. I mean, at least the beginning of that. Yeah, in about every 10 minutes, I screw something up and cause all kinds of, and wreak havoc all over my life and those around me. So I think that's what this one was about. I don't know if anyone is enjoying any of these poems, but, you know, I've read through, I don't know, a dozen of them so far. And, you know, I think it's fun. I haven't looked at these in a while, but they're actually pretty poignant. And the saddest thing, though, the most depressing side of it is that a lot of this stuff is still true today. And this was written 7 years ago. So I guess I'm not really making that much progress, and that's disappointing, but what are you going to do? On that note, I'm going to close because, God damn it, why would I be able to get, you know, 45 minutes worth of time to myself where people aren't making noise, slamming doors, dogs barking, just crazy. Anyway, happy Friday. Hope you guys have a good weekend ahead. I'm not sure what I'm doing this weekend, but I'll try to drop a couple more episodes down on you. And, as always, thanks for listening. Check out the other stuff I'm doing. I got songs coming out almost every other week. So if you're into lo-fi hip hop or jazz or ambient or whatever the hell it is that I do, that would be cool if you check it out as well. But hey, thanks for listening. Talk to you soon. Have a good weekend.